There are two new reports out today on race and wrongful convictions. One of the headlines is that there were a record number of exonerations last year. The other is that innocent African Americans were more likely to be wrongfully convicted than whites, and that they spend longer in prison before exoneration than whites do. The National Registry of Exonerations compiled the data. And joining us now, the author, University of Michigan law professor Samuel Gross. He's also senior editor of the National Registry of Exonerations. And we're also joined by Obi Anthony, founder and president of Exonerated Nation, a group that helps people who have been exonerated. And he spent 17 years in prison for a murder he didn't commit. He was exonerated in 2011. Welcome to both of you. And Professor Gross, let me start with you. There are two things going on here. Start with, why are exonerations hitting record numbers?
I think the reason is basically that we're looking more. We're spending more time investigating cases in which people were convicted of crimes, and now there's new evidence of innocence. There are more innocence projects that are doing this each year. There are more resources devoted to it by other defense attorneys. And especially in the past 10 years, there are an increasing number of conviction integrity units. These are units in prosecutorial offices that are devoted to identifying and, to the extent possible, correcting cases where innocent people were convicted. That said, 166 exonerations a year, even 500 exonerations a year, in a country where there are about a million felony convictions every year, and probably thousands, possibly tens of thousands of convictions of innocent people every year, is still a drop in the bucket. And it remains to be seen whether we'll undertake reforms and attempts to address this problem that are commensurate with the size of the problem.
Now, you haven't said three letters that I would have thought I would hear by now on this issue, and that's DNA. Has that been a big part of the number of exonerations?
It's a part. In fact, I'm not surprised that you expected to hear them. I think most Americans think that exoneration is the second word of a two-word phrase that begins with the letters DNA. Mm. DNA exonerations have always been a minority of the exonerations. And the reason is pretty straightforward. DNA is extremely useful in cases in which the criminal leaves some type of biological trace evidence, in rape cases where it's most often used, semen, that can identify the person who committed the crime. But that's not true in most crimes. It's not true in robberies. It's not true in drug crimes. It's not true. So where DNA is available, it's extremely valuable. Also, a lot of the cases where DNA could clear people who were imprisoned years ago before DNA testing was available before trial have been cleared. And a lot of the others are now getting old or have died or are out of prison for other reasons. So the number of cases where DNA will be available for the types of purposes that it used to exonerate people for, ordinary routine sexual assault cases, will decrease over time. That'll be done before trial, or it will have already been done.
And what about the issue that you bring up in the other report, which is that innocent African Americans are more likely to be wrongfully convicted than whites? What's the main reason for that?
The reason is well known. Everybody is better at identifying strangers of their own race than identifying strangers of other races. And that's especially true of whites in this society than as compared to African Americans, because whites like myself are a majority. So we may spend our entire life with relatively little contact with African Americans and therefore not be able to distinguish African Americans from each other. But African Americans, by necessity, have to deal with whites all the time because we're the great majority in the country. That's a well-known problem, and it explains why a very small sliver of the rape crimes that are committed in the United States, crimes in which black men attack white women, account for 50% of the exonerations in which eyewitness identification was an issue.
Well, Obi Anthony, let me bring you in. You are African American, and you say race played a role in your case, but there were other problems with your case. It started on March 27th, 1994, when a man was shot and killed outside an apartment building in Los Angeles, and a resident of the building identified you as one of the shooters. And then after you were convicted, a judge determined that he lied during his testimony, and prosecutors failed to disclose that they had made a deal with him in exchange for his testimony against you.
Yes, correct. And this resident, I mean, like, let's truth be told, it was a pimp that was running a brothel. The building in which the crime happened outside of was a known brothel. The Los Angeles Police Department, Newton, they were all familiar and was aware of the brothel being ran. And the individual who pointed towards me and my ex co-defendant, as I say now, he was an individual who ran the brothel. And so, you know, he was already fishy from the gate. This is information in which I wasn't privileged to until later on after my conviction. So,
and why were you exonerated?
Well, I got exonerated because of the judge found that there was prosecutorial misconduct, that there was police misconduct, that there was ineffective assistance of counsel, and that ultimately was a miscarriage. That was a miscarriage of justice.
So, 17 years for you in prison for a crime that you didn't commit. What has it been like to try to rebuild your life since you got out?
It's been like, you know, for lack of better metaphors, it's been like a salmon kind of going upstream, trying to, you know, all kind of different obstacles, technology, initially trying to find a job, also trying to get my identification when I first came home, also trying to find some help with my PTSD when I came home. There was no services that was in line for me when I came home. It wasn't like I was convicted of a crime, so I didn't have the privileges of the parole board. And so after all of those years and after me coming home, only thing was given to me was someone else's clothes and the door open for me to walk out into a society that which I had no a lot of information I didn't have.
And the PTSD, by the way, just from being in prison, you mean?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, I talk about it a lot. I get a chance to go around and talk to kids at different universities and colleges, and I explain to them that, you know, for 17 years of my life, I had to get up for breakfast and go to a chow hall. And every time I walked out of that door, I had to be concerned whether or not if my neighbor or a guy down the tier was going to try to assault me or stab me. And that was my going to breakfast and going to dinner every day whenever I came out of the cell. And I asked them, you know, did you think about some harm happened to you when you got out of your bed to go down to the kitchen to get something to eat? And it's that sort of trauma, that sort of stress that's on a person's mind every single day of self-preservation. How do I keep myself safe and secure in here, knowing that I'm innocent and I'm surrounded by all of these different type of individuals, from manipulators to connivers and liars, all of these individuals who seek to try to do harm to those individuals who they see weakness in. And it was a difficult environment.
Did you ever, in the course of those 17 years, wonder if you actually had committed the crime? In other words, does your mind play tricks on you and you start to think, well, maybe I did do this if I've been put in this position?
Absolutely not. I mean, like, that's, I talk to the kids about that. It's like, you know, when you're at home and you have a sibling at the house and your sibling do something and mom comes home and, you know, perceives or believes that it's you and immediately begins to start launching off on you, and the sibling sits back and doesn't do anything. You don't take it. No, you don't.
Right.
You never think that, you know, wander in your mind. Only thing wanders in your mind, only thing run around in your mind is, when is the truth going to come out? The fact of it is that you realize and understand and appreciate that they can do whatever you want to the truth, and it'll come out at some time or another. And that's what happened in this case here. The truth came out. It took 17 years and a happenstance of some other situation to bring forth that truth. But the fact of it is that it was uncovered and I was able to get my freedom.
So, Professor Gross, let me go back to you. When you hear that story from O.B. Anthony, are there policy changes that could be made at this point based on your reports that could stop these situations from happening where people end up spending years in prison for crimes they didn't commit?
Definitely. The first policy reform would be for the police to do what they're supposed to and not cut corners, not deal with cases as casually as they sometimes do, and especially not do that in a manner that discriminates on the basis of race.
It has to do with white privilege. Until individuals begin to start recognizing that there is a white privilege that is attached to not only to the criminal justice system, but how it operates and how it treats those not only guilty, but those who are innocent as well, the people as a whole. And the fact of it is that when we recognize that there is a privilege that is attached to those individuals and how they utilize it and how they exact their authority upon individuals such as myself and other individuals is erroneous. And we need to not only take light of it and make awareness of it, but we need to be assertive and take action. You have exonerees who go around and advocate for reform. I myself advocate for reform. There's a law in the state of California called Obie's Law because of my advocation. Also in the state of California, because of my advocacy work, there's a law that was put in place to hold prosecutors accountable who knowingly and willfully withhold evidence against the innocent. And it's a felony in the state of California because of that.
Well, we will link to the reports at hereandnow.org. Obie Anthony, founder and president of Exonerated Nation, and Samuel Gross, who is the senior editor of the National Registry of Exonerations. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.